going to go out there and say that, you know, government has not done a good job in feeding to anybody. And I'm talking about the entire government spectrum, Kristen. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about left, right, center, the whole bit. They're not feeding to the narrative, maybe, of how important jobs were to this generation. And there were a lot of problems with that. That probably fed into this narrative about the fact they're not making the money. They're not able to do these things. How do you relate to that? And yet their love of government and their love of, like you say, the Bernie Sanders deal or more government, where these bureaucrats don't even seem to be able to address the real problems that millennials are having or experiencing today.
Yeah, now that's a really interesting question. And to me, that's the sort of thing that I would like to talk about is how do you marry this idea that government hasn't worked and yet a lot of millennials are looking for a bigger government or more government intervention, right? You would think that we would go just the opposite.
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Well, millennials and baby boomers are taught to hate each other, but they need each other to survive. That was the title of this column that caught my attention in Quartz, and it's from an author, Michael North. I want to read this to you here. Recently, I argued that generations are more divided than ever in the United States. There is evidenced in no small part by the recent election in which younger voters overwhelmingly favored Hillary Clinton, whereas older voters favored U.S. President Donald Trump. Now, let's pause there a moment as we take this conversation forward. And we're going to talk today about millennials and baby boomers, but more in a conversational tone, not so much political, although we start with this point because this was centric to the last election. But then we take it forward and we talk about all the different factors that are going on today in society. I want you to welcome our co-host of the show today, Sally Fernandez, joins us from Florence, Italy. And also, Dr. Christian H. comes today with us. The first time you've been on the show.
It is. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Where are you in the country, Christian?
I'm in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you're right there in the epicenter.
I'm right in the middle of it all.
Okay. When you're in D.C., it's always referred to as you're either inside the Beltway or outside of the Beltway. Where are you?
I'm inside the Beltway.
You really are in the epicenter,
I'm
then.
I'm in the epicenter.
All right, very cool. Let's start this conversation on this note, since you're coming from us right from the Beltway. Let's talk about this last election real quickly, and then move off and pivot from that. Sally, when you hear this statement of younger voters overwhelmingly favoring Hillary Clinton, older voters favoring Donald Trump, was that your sense in the last? I mean, does that ring true to you?
Oh, absolutely. And then you have to go to the younger voters for Bernie Sanders. But clearly, the younger voters were more liberal and the older voters are more conservative.
Okay. Kristen, why is that? Why do you think that if that statement is true in your mind, why is it?
No, I definitely think that it's true. You kind of started off with that piece that was talking about this divide between the generations. I mean, I think that this election really talked about there's a divide, period, in our country. And I think that there is a changing of the guard. And I definitely think that millennials and just younger people in general tend to be a lot more liberal, a lot more open-minded, and we aren't really subscribing to the rules of the older generations. And for a lot of people, I think that Bernie Sanders really represented something new more so than Hillary.
Yeah, it was interesting. He was a phenomenon. There's no question about that. He was different than, in fact, that's probably why they lost so much, because they weren't unified with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, those voters, Kristen, you think?
No, I absolutely think. I mean, I think that we, I mean, we can probably talk about this election for hours on end, but I think that when Barack Obama won the election, the thing that the younger voters were telling us is that we want an outsider, we want someone new, we want something fresh. And for some reason, we forgot that with the next election. And I think that was a really a big misstep on the Democratic Party, and we just didn't have unity, that we weren't listening to each other.
Right there. But based on what you said, something new, something different, something odd, something whatever, a lot of people would say that is the reflection of what Donald Trump brought to the circus. Yeah?
I mean, I think if you're just looking for something new and something different and something odd, he definitely was something new and something odd. And I think that's what won him the election, is that they weren't looking at his politics, they weren't looking at his experience, they weren't looking at anything other than his newness. And I think if the Democratic Party would have made sure that they at least checked the box of newness, then we could have started looking at policies and politics and other things outside of just that newness element and being outside of the machine.
I think that's an important point, but I think also, Hillary was the old guard, and what happened is the young people, if they weren't going to go for Sanders, they stayed home and just didn't vote. And I think that's why Hillary lost. But I don't think they took Trump just because they wanted something new. The people who voted for Trump thought that our country was going too far to the left, and he espoused to bring it back. And I think it had more of his blatant policies, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. I think it really had to do, not because he was new, but because he had some steadfast tenets to get us back over to the middle or further to the right, but to get back from what the people who voted for him thought was lost during the 8 years during
Well,
the
let's
Obama
have Kristen
administration.
answer that point you just bring up, Sally. Do you think, in your opinion, that the country was further to the left through that the last administration, Kristen?
Absolutely not. I mean, I don't agree with that at all. I really think that this is probably where the generational piece comes in. I think that if you talk to the younger generation, whether you're liberal or conservative, I think that we might disagree on ideological, like this, whether or not that the government should be large or small, but I don't really think that we will disagree on the country being too far left. I think that sometimes that's coded language that really means something else. Donald Trump does not represent traditional Republican values at all. And so to somehow say that he was going to be the picture of pulling us further to the middle just doesn't quite ring a bell for me.
Although he did have a very democratic and liberal agenda himself for many years, Kristen.
Exactly, which is the reason why saying that for some reason that he was going to be the one to pull us back to being to the more traditional Republican values and more to the right
Oh, I
just
see.
doesn't ring true, because that isn't who he ever was and who he continues to be. He's a capitalist, and I think that that is really who he is through and through, probably more so before he's a conservative or a Democrat. He's a capitalist, and I think that he knows what to do to win.
Yeah, that's a great analysis, actually, Sally. When I the way Kristen just put that there, he's a capitalist. I mean, more than he is this or that, and I think that's true, don't you, Sally?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why the young repels away from him, because they're kind of anti-capitalist,
Yeah,
even
do you think
though.
they are, Kristen? Listen, that's a big question, Sally. Kristen, are the millennials, are they anti-capitalism?
I think that in a certain aspects of capitalism, yes, I think that some millennials are anti that, but not so. I always have a hard time talking about millennials as like some sort of monolith that all think and move the same way. So just putting the caveat that there are some differences, but yes, I do think that we see what the impacts of capitalism have been. You have to remember that we grew up in one of the largest recessions that our country has known, and so we've seen industries kind of fall, and we've seen our parents work really hard at jobs and get laid off. And so we've seen the downside of capitalism. So we're a lot more skeptical than maybe the generations prior to us have been.
There's an interesting point with what you just say, Christian, that we have to explore, and I want to bring it back to this very fascinating column in Quartz. Millennials and baby boomers are taught to hate each other, and we're going to find out the answer to that before the end of the show. But they need each other to survive is the caveat they're saying. Here's what I find interesting playing to the economic side of what you're talking about, Christian. It says in the column here, this political dissonance has coincided with an economic one. A comparably well-off older generation is moving further away from an increasingly disenfranchised younger one. Households headed by someone over 65, let's say, are currently 47 times wealthier than those headed by someone 35 or younger, which they say here is a record high. And this disparity has been growing for some time. And get this, ladies, since 1984, wealth of the under 35 age bracket has dropped by almost 70%, while that of those over 65 has increased by 42%. Kristen, speak to that a moment. Does that really piss the millennials off?
I think what pisses millennials off, and I really think that this idea of we're taught to hate each other isn't quite true. What I feel as a millennial is that the baby boomers hate us, and we're constantly trying to explain ourselves, and we're constantly trying to understand where this intense hate is coming from. I don't think that the hate goes on the other direction, at least not from my circles and my dealings with other millennials. I think what pisses us off is when we say, look at where we are, look at America, the system that you have bought into isn't working, so we're trying to find another way. Don't be mad at us because we don't want to work the same way that you work, because we want to have 3 and 4 jobs, and we want to have a side hustle, and we want to have work-life balance. What you set up isn't working 100%. And I think that may be why baby boomers get defensive, is because we're basically saying the system that you created, we don't like. And I think that people could get defensive around, you have to accept that decisions that your generation made may not have worked for the next generation. And that could be difficult. So I think that that is really more say, hey, it didn't work. We aren't blaming you for it, but let us figure out a different way to get it done. Well, and I think that that is where the tension comes in.
Sally, I have to tell you that it sounds like Dr. Kristen H. has her big woman boots on, because that was well said. What do you say to that?
I think it was very well said, except you have to look at some of the statistics, because I think, no doubt, the millennials are smart, they're self-confident, savvy. And they're the most well-educated of any generation. But the question is, what are they doing? Because the statistics don't bear out. I'd like to actually throw it back to Kristen in a second, because every generation is different. And granted, we evolve from the prior generation. You know, we try to redefine it, as we should. But we're evolving to, it should be transitioning, utilizing values and lessons that have been passed down, and then redefining them, you know, to sort of kind of adapt to the changing needs of your environment. So yes, we kind of screwed up the environment, the millennials are trying to fix it. But it appears to me that millennials want to dismiss anything that occurred before them. And they just want to kind of create a new mentality, a new way to live, love, work. And clearly, you know, the stats show that by 2020, there'll be 46% of all workers will be millennials. But Kristen, you wrote an article, a blog, where you redefined the ways millennials, the 4 ways millennials should redefine life. And so I'd be interested in how you're redefining life to make it a better world for all generations.
I think that's a really good point, and I'm glad that you brought up my blog post that I think I wrote that maybe 6 or so months ago, so it's kind of great how all this timing works together. I think what millennials are doing is that work is no longer the center of our lives, and I think that that's different. That's different from American culture. That's a very big departure, and that is the reason why you see so many articles of how do you work with millennials, and how do you motivate millennials, and how do you do all this with millennials, because the things that would motivate my parents, like giving them a corner office, I don't even want an office. So all of a sudden, how do you deal with motivating and trying to encourage a group of people that are motivated by different things? I want more time off. I want to be able to travel the world. I want to spend more time with friends and family. I want to have time to go to my yoga class. The things that are important to me are not just about where I work, and they aren't just about how much money I'm making. So that's why I think that statistic is a little bit interesting. I think millennials are making a little bit less money because we don't care as much as our older generations did about like just amassing a lot of wealth. And so it's a different priority. But I will be curious to look at, and these aren't statistics that we can pull up, or how are our relationships with our friends, and how much are we traveling? I know that I've traveled a lot more than my parents did at this age, and I'm just now getting them to travel more. And so I think that we're valuing different things. So if you use your metrics that a baby boomer would use to measure success, you might see you guys aren't even doing anything. Where are your numbers? How many houses are you buying? How many cars do you own? And the answer is none, because that's not how I measure success for me.
So how do the millennials, who will eventually be the largest working population in the U.S., mm-hmm. how are the millennials going to make this a better place, the world a better place, our country a better place? Or are you just existing for your own purposes?
I mean, I think that the way you make it a better place is that if each person and this is might be me getting a little philosophical, but I think if each person worries about being the best version of themselves, you're the kindest that you can be, you're exhibiting love, you're gracious, you're respectful. If everyone commits to doing that, our world would be a better place. If everyone commits to being communicating well, I'm just now finishing up the book, The Four Agreements, and it's all about four agreements that you make with yourself. But it's sort of this idea that if you commit to being a better person, and that journey starts with you, then the world can be a better place. I think that millennials aren't looking that I have to come in and fix some broken world. That the broken world is made up of broken people. And if broken people each fix their own individual brokenness, then all of a sudden we wouldn't have as much of a broken world. So I think that we are taking it more of an individual approach to growth that maybe baby boomers see as being selfish, but we see as, hey, if I'm good and I'm balanced and I'm not frustrated and I'm not getting upset and I'm not starting arguments and I can have a good conversation with the peer or a good conversation with someone who works for me, then I am making the world a better place. And then on top of that, we are 10 times more tolerant than the generations were before. We aren't judging people who have different sexual orientations. We aren't judging people because of their race. We aren't judging people against their religion. We are truly creating that American dream where people who are different can exist happily in one area, because we aren't constantly throwing around judgments about what you have to look like and how you have to dress and how you have to be. We are creating an environment where you can do and be exactly what you want to be and exactly what you want to do. And this truly is America, where everything goes, whereas the older generation still wants to define respectability politics and how you have to dress and what you want to look like in order to be seen as successful in America.
Well, the American dream for me is having the opportunities to have a career, work hard, make money, have a successful life with a spouse, for those who want to have children, be able to rear their children, give them a good education. I mean, it's what you said is wonderful, but for me, the self-professed baby boomer, it seems idealistic. Now, I just like to throw out some stats and see how you think the perception and whether it's accurate. The Pew study did a research in 2015, and they looked at millennials and saw them as greedy, self-absorbed, and wasteful was the ending conclusion. It showed that 24% of millennials consider themselves responsible, only 24% compared to 66% of boomers. 27% of millennials consider their generation self-reliant. Only 17% consider themselves moral, and only 29% consider themselves compassionate. Where baby boomers, the figures are much higher. Baby boomers are 70% hardworking, 66% responsible, and 52% patriotic, but millennials say they're only 12% say they're patriotic, 24% were responsible, and 30% said they were hardworking. So, I mean, when you look at that, how does what you just said square with how the millennials are sizing up, and how is that going to make us a better world?
So those aren't statistics. That's a survey. And I would need to see, having a doctorate in understanding survey research, I would need to see that survey, because those statistics don't line up, or that survey research doesn't line up with anything else that I read. So my first thing would be I would need to kind of fact checked your sources. I mean, I also think it's dangerous to get in this kind of this back and forth of name calling. Oh, millennials are greedy. Oh, millennials are self-absorbed. I mean, there's a whole book said that the baby boomers generations are sociopaths and they don't care about anyone other than themselves. And so I think that there's statistics on both sides that can be thrown back and forth that say, oh, you're this or oh, you're that. And to me, that doesn't get us anywhere. What I really am trying to explain is what we really feel and not some statistic or some survey that probably wasn't done well that was very biased, because as you are well aware, it's very easy to have a survey that is biased. And so,
okay, then I'll get away from a survey. Millennials, one of the articles we were referred to was called Millennials Don't Suck, You're Just Old and Hate Change. Well, in the survey, there was also a video from a millennial, and she in the video actually apologized to her elders by saying that we're just existing, not contributing. We don't have basic manners. We listen to obscene music and degrade women, glorify drugs and crime. We start cussing to prove points. We idolize Kim Kardashian. We demonize Tim Tebow. We're lazy, entitled, want to make a lot of money, want free education, but not willing to work. And it goes on and on and on about how they don't respect their elders. They don't respect their country. They're more divided as a country. And she's saying, in part, due to the millennials, because everything that was once frowned upon is now celebrated. Nothing has value because you take advantage of everything. So I'm just taking the words from a millennial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've seen that video, and I completely disagree with everything that she's saying. I think that millennials have gotten a bad rap of not being respecting their elders or not kind of nodding to those that have come before them. I don't think that that's true at all. And what I can base it off of is, and millennials don't work hard. Millennials are the highly educated are more educated than anyone else. You don't get a college degree by not working hard. And so a lot of times I think that these statistics are bumping into. So what the words that we want to use to kind of judge and label don't match up to the actual statistics that show us the numbers. So on one hand, you say millennials just care about making a lot of money. But when you look at the statistics, millennials make less money than anyone else. Oh, millennials only care about material things. But when you really look at the numbers, millennials aren't buying homes and we aren't buying cars. Oh, millennials are this and that. Well, millennials have some of the highest student loan debt because we're so educated. So a lot of times these statistics or these kind of the actual statistics of what millennials are actually doing doesn't really line up with the rhetoric that we throw out around them. And to me, that's not even what matters. I think if we can get away from the rhetoric and get away from what divides us, and then maybe we can actually get to the point of working together, because you've made an excellent point that millennials are going to make up around 47% of the workforce, whether we like it or not, we're here to stay. And so we can get frustrated at our outlook of life, or we could try to learn to understand it. And I think there's a lot about the millennial outlook of life that anyone can adapt. I wrote a blog once that you don't have to be frustrated by the millennial lifestyle, that you don't have to be a millennial to live the millennial lifestyle. Living a life that is happy, a life that is healthy, and a life that is free is open to anyone. You don't have to be born in a certain generation to do that. Also, we can learn to respect our differences. If your definition of success is making a lot of money and having a free education or having a great education and having a spouse and wanting to live by a certain moral code, then you get to do that. No millennial is going to argue and tell you that you can't do that. But for some reason, baby boomers want to argue with millennials to tell me that I can't live the way that I want to live. And that's the part that I don't understand.
And of course, you can't put everybody in the one block. And you mentioned that already, Christian. It's hard to say, okay, all millennials act like this. All baby boomers act like this.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way, clearly. So we can argue those kinds of points back and forth. We're going to take this further just after the pause. It's really a very interesting dialogue, I think. I'm enjoying it. Be back with Sally Fernandez and Dr. Christian H. in just a moment. Well, we're a new breed of talk radio, and with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio, with shows like Blue Lives Radio, OPSEC Radio Special Operations, shows that impact your health, like The Misdiagnosed Life, The Dr. Stem Show, What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy. and our newest show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us here at America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. We are talking today about the millennial generation in comparison to the baby boomers. And again, as I was just saying before the break, it's challenging to put a group of folks and say everybody marches to this drum or acts this way or does this. I mean, that clearly doesn't happen. That's never happened. And it's not going to be the case. We have what's our personal freedoms. But we're talking here as a generality of how's this generation handling, is it the status quo? How are they handling things? I think what I'm detecting right now in the back and forth with Sally Fernandez and Dr. Kristen Aitchen talking about, the millennials versus the baby boomers, is that, Kristen, you're saying that the millennials are not really motivated economically, that they want to live their life, like you say, if they want to do yoga, or if they want to do this or do that, or have more time off or travel or what have you, that's fine. Now, when you see that there's this disparity in dollars, I mean, which is pretty wild here. The first thing that comes to my mind is this paragraph is like an oxymoron to me. When it says here, well, households headed by someone over 65 are currently 47 times. Well, no kidding. If you've right. lived to 60, I mean, isn't it though? I mean,
it has 30 more years.
Hello, Houston. I mean, wake up, people, right,
if
Kristen?
If they didn't, I would be concerned. Yeah, I read the same thing and I was like, of course, this is a silly statistic.
I mean, it's kind of weird the way it's put out here. Like, is it supposed to, Sally? I mean, would we expect something different from that outcome?
Absolutely not. But he also points out that the unemployment rate costs more than $25 billion in the U.S. each year from millennials not working.
Well, but let's bring it to that point, because that's the next evolution of this conversation. Kristen, and here's the thing. Have we become a society where, is there a percentage? Let me ask it this way. Is there a percentage of the millennial generation, do they have their hands out too much, and are they expecting too much?
So I think, I think a lot about this. I think that there's different. So when you're looking at millennials, all you're looking at is a generation. But what you completely forget about are the economics within that generation. So the way a millennial who acts, who comes from a very high affluent area, they're going to have a different persona and a different way of kind of entering the world, the millennials who didn't come from that much wealth or who didn't come from as much privilege. And so I think that sometimes it can be hard to compare a privileged millennial versus a non-privileged millennial. I can't speak to how privileged millennials act. And so this idea of my hand is out, I just want things, that to me doesn't sound like whether you're a baby boomer or millennial, that just sounds like someone who's privileged and a spoiled brat. And I think that that person exists no matter if they're millennial or Gen X, a baby boomer, that if you're privileged and you're a spoiled brat, then you're privileged and a spoiled brat. And I don't think that that person needs to necessarily be wrapped up into the millennial.
Well, that's a great point, Kristen, because that kind of exists in every generation, doesn't it?
Exactly. They're spoiled brats who get more than they should, who parents overindulge them, and no matter if they were born in the 50s, the 60s, or the 90s, they're just spoiled brats. So if we can just kind of remove them from the equation for a second, I think what you find unique about millennials is this idea of not wanting to work. I don't think is true at all. Every single one of my friends has what you would call a traditional day job, and then they have another job or two that they do on the side. So they might be a teacher by day and a musician at night. And they're also, so they're going to rehearsals and they're practicing and they're playing shows. They might be an artist. They have a blog. They have every single one of my friends has something. They're a model. They do makeup. They sell organic teas. Like, every single one of my friends is doing multiple jobs. So this idea that millennials don't work is laughable to me. I think that, and it's interesting to, how do you look at the unemployment rate? Is the unemployment, are people unemployed because they don't want jobs? Are people unemployed because they can't get jobs? And who do you kind of blame for that? Millennials are some of the most underemployed folks. I know people who have master's degrees who are administrative assistants because that's the best job that they can get in the current market of where they live in. And so I think that when you start talking about employment and economics, it can get really fuzzy really quickly. I do know what millennials don't know is that what the system has, the current capitalistic system is not working. And so the idea of getting a corporate job and working for 35 years, we don't buy into that anymore because we saw it break. And so what we're doing is we're creating our own jobs and creating our own opportunities and trying to figure out a way to monetize our blogs, which is something that we care about. It's something that we love. And it's a way for us to bring.
Well, Kristen, listen, more people left the workforce in the past 8 years under the Obama administration than in my recent memory ever. And the numbers were always skewed and not reported correctly in the unemployment numbers. You really couldn't even follow them properly because they were totally, totally rigged. But that was one of the biggest problems with the millennials. You just hit one of the big points spot on, that they couldn't get jobs. And jobs were not readily available for many of these people, also it was said, although I have a hard time understanding that because I have always worked all my life. And if I always, as a young boy, I always found jobs, multiple jobs, as you just said. That's how I lived as well. Or I created my own opportunities, my own experiences. But so if what I'm asking here next is, I think, important. If obviously I'm going to go out there and say that, you know, government has not done a good job in feeding to anybody. And I'm talking about the entire government spectrum, Kristen. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about left, right, center, the whole bit. They're not feeding to the narrative maybe of how important jobs were to this generation. And there were a lot of problems with that. That probably fed into this narrative about the fact they're not making the money. They're not able to do these things. How do you relate to that? And yet their love of government and their love of, like you say, the Bernie Sanders deal or more government, where these bureaucrats don't even seem to be able to address the real problems that millennials are having or experiencing today.
Yeah, now that's a really interesting question. And to me, that's the sort of thing that I would like to talk about is how do you marry this idea that government hasn't worked and yet a lot of millennials are looking for a bigger government or more government intervention, right? You would think that we would go just the opposite way.
See, I don't get it. So thank you for picking up on that and sizing that up. Aunt, talk to that point, please.
So I think what happens is that I think the issue in our country is that we have a two-party political system. And so what people end up doing is voting by the issue that they care about the most, even though some of the issues that they care about don't align with their political party or their leanings. So I think that most millennials would probably agree that if they trusted systems, I think that there's kind of this distrust of systems. So just as much as we distrust the government to a lot of I think a lot of people distrust the government. I don't care if you're on the left or the right. There's just this idea that the government structure will actually make the best decisions for citizens. I think a lot of people don't buy into that. So I think that a lot of us are making decisions out of that. But then there's also these other things that we're making decisions about that probably mean more to us. So the human rights issues are a really big deal for a lot of millennials. And this idea that no matter where you're from or what you believe in or what your religion is or what your race or what your socioeconomic or anything, that you're treated fairly and you're treated the same and you aren't disenfranchised or behind the ball because of how you're treated, right? And so I think that sometimes that ideal, well, a political party that believes in that, I might vote with that even though I might actually believe in a smaller government. Or I might believe that states should have more power, but I really believe that women should have the right to choose. And so what happens is when people believe, no one believes all, well, there's some people, very few people believe all left and all right. I think we're a mixture of that. And some things are a little bit more left and some things a little bit more right. But what you do is you sit down and you write down your priorities. And whatever your priority is tends to be where you vote. And so although I do think that most millennials would probably in a ideological way believe in a smaller government, the issue with that is then is the privatization, and now corporations are going to get more of that power. And we don't necessarily believe in the corporate's ability to make good decisions either. So you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, that we don't believe in large structures making good decisions for people.
Right, right. Kristen, I want you to listen to what I'm going to ask Sally next, because I'd like you to respond to this. Sally, tell us, explain your political viewpoint real quickly. Fiscally, economically, you think, when Kristen says left to right, you think in one sense, social issues, you might think in another sense. How would you describe your take of all of that, yourself, Sally, as from a baby boomer perspective?
Yeah, I'm a fiscal conservative and I'm socially moderate. But I think that the liberals tend to want a larger government, and it comes from a lot of research that has to do with providing more services. And so they want the free college, they want access to certain things, they want the government to take care of them in many, many ways. As a fiscal conservative, I think we should have smaller government, put more money, allow people to make more choices over their lives, their money,
Now, hold on to that
and
thought.
be
More
responsible.
choices in their lives, and that's a great line right there. I want Kristen to feed into this a little bit. When Sally puts her, when she just puts that out there right now, Kristen, connect the dots for me with you in your life, both socially and economically, to this paradigm. How does that fit to Sally's viewpoint?
No, see, that was something that I was going to bring up earlier, is that when millennials say that we want to live our lives and kind of have this individual freedom, I was going to make that's a very conservative viewpoint. Yet baby boomers hate it. And so it's so interesting to me that when millennials are saying, okay, if we're going down the thought process that most baby boomers tend to be more conservative, if we're saying, hey, you're right, you think that we should have more individual freedoms and we should be able to do the things that we want, we're going to adopt that in our everyday life. And all of a sudden, like, no, you need to follow the structure. And so I think that that's interesting that when we kind of buy into something that the conservatives believe in, it's still not seen the
See,
same way.
that's where I think now we're getting to the real juice of this thing, because that's where I think Sally Fernandez, that's where I think the Republican Party and the whole movement of conservatism has been lost. And I've said this for years. I've said this 10, 15 years ago. I thought they were going down the wrong road, and I seen it early on in my career. That they were telling people, they kept saying they were like the party of small government, live your life free, kumbaya, let's all just have a great time. And it was, we're not going to tell you how to live your life. And then they start with all of these rules and regulations, and they tell you what you can and can't do, which pisses a lot of people off, by the way.
Exactly.
And that all cut, and I couldn't mesh those two. And Christian, I really couldn't connect those two dots over the years. It's like I really struggled with that point. I said, I really don't understand how this party says this, and then but they're not putting their actions with their words. I think that's where they lost a lot of the millennials, and that's my feelings, Christian. I think the conservative movement and the Republican movement lost a lot of millennials in the younger generations and the whole Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders movement, if you will, was because they kind of gave them what they wanted, which was that personal freedom to, because first and foremost, you're going to worry about your immediate surroundings. You're going to worry about your personal freedoms. You're going to worry about your personal families. You're going to worry about that immediate space around you. Before you worry about the beltway and what's going on in the big picture of Washington or around, you're going to worry about your immediate world. And if your immediate world is being squeezed by bureaucrats that tell you what you can and can't do or how to do it, I think you got a mixed message at that point, at the very, very best.
Exactly. I honestly think that, and this might not be a popular idea, but I think that the conservatives and the Republicans, we have lost what it means to be a liberal and what it means to be conservative. I remember learning in school what the ideological differences between the two parties were. In this last election, we didn't talk about big government versus small government. That's not what we were talking about. We were talking about immigrants. We were talking about a woman's right to choose. We were talking about whether or not gay marriage was, how we felt about that. We were talking about building a wall. We weren't having conversation. If our parties, both parties, need to have a marketing expert come in and rebrand them.
Listen, this is really,
Kristen,
really,
yeah.
really a cool
Go ahead.
conversation. We're going to pause here just a moment again and be back with Dr. Kristen H. and Sally Fernandez in just a moment here. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a great lineup back at AmericaOutloud.com. And also, get the apps. We now stream 24/7 on Android and Apple. Just look for America Out Loud Talk Radio. We have to be very careful at this point, because if we don't If we don't do certain things in this country to protect the identity of America and to protect who we are, and I'm talking America, you are as American as I am, as Sally is, as, you know, Linus and Beverly are, our producers, you understand? And if we don't start to protect what makes America great and what should be, and I don't mean to say that as some sort of a political point, I just realized when I said that, that's not what I'm referring to, but, you know, what makes us really, what makes this country move and tick, a lot of the things that we're fighting with and wrestling with now in this country are undermining. They're disrupting us. They're disrupting what it takes to be, it has made America great, Kristen, if that makes sense.
I you know, this make America great point is, I've always said, make it great to who? I think that different people in America have experienced America in different ways. And for some people, this is as great as America has ever been. And if I look back 40, 50, 60 years, America wasn't so great for me. And some people look back 40 or 50, 60 years and America was really great for them. And as they move forward, America is not so great for them. And I think that's where race is entering the picture. If you lived in middle America 60, 70 years ago and you were a white male, America might have been a little bit greater for you than it is for you now, because now you're competing with different people for jobs and there's equal pay and you can't abuse people the same way that you could. And so for you, I want to make America great again. I want to go back to a day where I could disenfranchise people and I could fire people and I can treat my workers any way and they didn't have as much protections, because to me, that was a great America. If I was a person who was a minority and I didn't have access to education or I didn't have access to a home or I didn't have access to clean water, America is becoming more great for me. And so I think this idea of going backwards to get something great never happens. It's like in a relationship, you know, when you're dating someone and it was all great in the first year and you're 4 years in and you say, oh my God, what happened? We were the first year. Can we go be great again? No, you can't, because what you were that very first year, you're never going to replicate that again. So I don't think that we need to make America great again. I completely disagree with that. I think that we need to continue to make sure that America is representing all the interests and how as diverse as it is. We'd like to coin ourselves as being this melting pot of all these religions and these cultures, but really America has been pretty homogeneous for a really long time. And just now are we really confronting the idea that, wow, we truly are diverse and we truly are getting ready to be way more heterogeneous than we ever have been. And now we have to figure out a system and a way of being and a culture that respects all of that. And that is why we're having so much tension in our country now. And we probably will continue having it over the next five to 10 years.
Well, don't you think the reason that is, Kristen, don't you think for a minute it's because we're letting the crazy people run the farm?
We definitely are letting some crazy people run the farm right now. but I think that
they've defined us, aren't they? Aren't they defining this whole thing?
I think that there's more crazy people in the farm than we realize. And I think that that is a big, that's how he won. That is how he won. And when you say crazy people in the farm, I automatically think Trump. I don't know if that's what you meant, but I think that there's a lot. We like to draw our lines in the sand and stand on different sides and not understand how the other side functions or lives or what moves them. You're the South versus the North. You're the East Coast versus the West Coast. We have the rich versus the poor, the middle versus the not, the working class versus the blue collar. Everyone kind of gets in their little bucket and no one understands how the other bucket works.
I have a big point, Kristen, I got to talk to you about. You keep referencing Trump, and I just, obviously you didn't vote for him, I'm assuming, correct?
You can make that a very fair assumption.
Okay, good.
And I did vote, and I am just as equally as frustrated of the folks who didn't vote, and that rubs me. There was the folks who's like, oh, my political stance is to not vote at all.
Right, but when you speak about why, so let me say this, when you ask about why Trump got elected or who he is or that the crazy people came out, let me say this. A lot of people would say that same thing and dial it back to 2007 when a junior senator came out of nowhere who had no experience, the name of Barack Obama, and he took the office of the presidency with no experience, no foreign experience, no experience at all. And people were shocked, and they thought the crazy people took the country over, and then they looked at his past, and they looked at some of the social tendencies of who he had hung with and why, and there were a lot of people upset. Do you see that?
So I think this is, it's interesting that to say that Barack Obama had no experience, I think is not quite fair when he has a law degree and he was actual junior senator compared to our president now, who has no law degree and no political background at all. But I do get your point that compared to previous presidential candidates, he had
he was a junior senator that came out of nowhere. That is a fact.
And only for a couple of years.
But I just want to compare that to our current president, who was never a senator.
Hold on,
successful businessman.
Well, and Kristen, but Wait, here's
we, in a business.
Sorry. Gotta be careful how we define these rules, though, because here's why. Listen to this now. For many years, we keep saying the bureaucrats are not doing a good job. The political elite are destroying the system. We just said that on this show today. There are too many crazy people inside the Beltway that are defining who we are and what we are, which you've just pointed out yourself, Kristen. If that's the case, we've often said we need a new perspective. See, where America stood up in this last election is they got tired of people defining who they were, and they actually did want somebody fresh from the business side of things. So when we say experience, it like you would say, what kind of experience are we speaking about? Some people would find it a big relief not to have political experience. But then here's what happens is, the president is experiencing right this moment in time is because there's a political system that is bigger than him and bigger than everything. And that political system is they're bent on destroying him because he's a disruptor. And they don't want a disruptor in there because they don't want that at all. So let me be clear to say, I think this country stood up and put a Donald Trump in there as well as any big business person that didn't have that political experience doesn't make them not capable of doing the job, Kristen. You know?
I disagree a little bit. I don't think that the political system is hell-bent on anti-Donald Trump simply because he's a disruptor. Because Barack Obama was also a disruptor, and they were hell-bent on making sure that he wasn't successful either. So I think what I agree on, I think what we both sides will agree on, is the way that our political system is currently works is not working, and there is something broken to it. And I think that most of the American people also feel this brokenness. And I think that just as we would have a Barack Obama that was a junior senator and doesn't have the long history of political experience like most presidents, so that was the Democrats' nod of trying to get an outsider, I think that Donald Trump was also the conservatives' nod of trying to get an outsider. So I understand the desire of having an outsider and having a disruptor. I think the piece that we're missing is that what Donald Trump played into was people's fear. And I think that is the issue, is he ran an election on fear. The fear of what's going to happen if the immigrants come and take your jobs and this idea of fear and it divided people. And that's the way that we first started the show, is that we are more divided generationally than we ever have been before. And I just think that we're more divided, period, than we ever have been before. Because I think that no matter where your generation or what your race or your creed, I think that there is a lot of division there. And I think
that's been building for several administrations. Yeah. Quite frankly, right. you can dial that back to the end of the George W. Bush administration, and then you can put it on fast forward through the Obama administration. And that left, let's be clear, I don't blame that all on the current president.
I don't blame that on him at all. I think our country has been divided since its inception.
Amen. We agree.
But we're talking, we're talking about Trump, and we mentioned before, Malcolm mentioned Make America Great, and Christian, you said, for who, for what person? It's different for different people. But I think when you say Make America Great, we're talking about making it great for all people in America. And the ways to do that is to get back to creating jobs, stimulating the economy, having a better healthcare system, having a better education system, all of that will benefit everybody. And I think that's what we talk about, making America great.
So I have a question. Do you think that liberals don't believe that same thing. We don't want to create jobs. We don't want to have a better economy. We don't want to have a better health system.
I think everything I just said, every American wants, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on.
Perfect.
It's just so I think becomes so.
Yeah.
That's why we can't come to common, because it's so divisive for reasons that really don't make sense.
Well, the question is, Shelley, how do we go about achieving that?
I think that's a really important point, that when we step back from whether you're liberal or conservative or gender or whatever you are, when we really get down to what do we want, all of us probably want the same things. We want to live in a safe environment. We want the environment to be strong. We want to have jobs. We want to be able to feed and support our families. You know, there's basic things that we all want that we all agree to. I think where we disagree, and so I think when you have an argument that, oh, you know, the conservative side, we want to create jobs. Well, who doesn't want to create jobs? We all agree to that. I think it's all of that other stuff and all that other noise and all that other gooky stuff is what gets in the way. It's not the creative stuff. Yeah,
I agree with you. But the only way to get there is you know, the politics screws it up. You know, it gets in the way, the emotions get in the way, and we don't get anything accomplished. But if we get back to the topic of the millennials, you guys have a lot to contribute. But it seems like you're stepping away from it and just kind of creating your own little utopia. And I just, you know, I want them to all be like you and to recognize the issues and be involved, because the only way we can make America great, despite the politicians, is if we all are part of the project.
Coming into this conversation today with Dr. Kristen H. and Shelley Fernandez, I started thinking about this headline here, too. You know, I got thinking, ladies, about this millennial baby boomer conversation, and there's a lot of headlines, and Shelley, you're seeing them out there where it says, you know, like they're taught to hate each other, and I thought, well, those are some pretty strong words, you know, and as I start to look at that, and then I thought to myself, well, that just doesn't make any damn sense to me. I mean, how could that be? When the baby boomers are the ones that had the millennials. These are our kids.
Exactly.
How the hell can we hate them? I mean, that's some strong language there. I look at this language on a lot of authors who make, you know, sensational headlines because they hope you'll read it, of course, and we got hooked in because we did. But think about that a moment. I mean, these are our kids. These are, we talk about them like they're some foreign species of some sort, you know, on another planet, you know?
It's you take it to another level. I mean, you know, the boomers took to the streets in protest and the millennials take to the tweets, you know, and both generations when they were young were considered spoiled and narcissistic. So
I thought of that too, Shelley. I remember that growing up myself. We were accused of that all the time. This same conversation you could have played back, you know, 30 years ago, and it would have been the same thing, Kristen. They said, well, you people are, you know, you baby boomers are nothing but a bunch of crybabies. You didn't know how to do anything. And it was the same conversation the generation before us.
And maybe you guys are just doing what you were taught to do, that you were taught to not like the generation underneath you, so you're just doing the same thing to us. But I think what I'm trying to say is, if we step back, I think we have a lot more in common than you think. And a lot of the ways that we're thinking are challenging things are because our parents taught us to do that.
We lose sight a great deal in this country about how good we have it. We lose sight of the fact that we are living in the greatest country in the world, always has been and is today. We lose sight because of this whole stereotyping about what they want us to think. I think there are a lot of forces at play that want to keep this negative vibe out there.
I agree.
An American against American, people against people, conservatives against liberals, Democrats against Republicans, black against white, Hispanic against Asian. I think we're caught off guard because there are a lot of forces in people who enjoy seeing all of this, these pit bull matches, if you will. But, you know, when you think about it, and you hear a lot of the conversation today coming out of this talk today from Dr. Kristen H. and Shelley Fernandez, I will tell you this. There's so much that we have in common as Americans. And I think for me, the positive word is I get excited about this. I get excited about this conversation here today, my friends. And I do that because I listen to, you know, Dr. Kristen H. I see her, I'm talking to Shelley here, and, you know, you hear the different perspectives and the people we tap into from around the world on this show on life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure. And, you know, some people kind of chuckle at the pursuit of pleasure, but, well, maybe that's our claim to fame for the millennial crowd. I don't know. But you know what? Me as a baby boomer, and I'm on the early side of the baby boomer. Let me make that clear. I'm on the early part of that generation. I almost don't fit in there. How's that?
So I'm on the other side, Malcolm.
Well, I'm still on the younger side. And so I could fit into either generation. Maybe that's why I tend to be a little more with the in crowd or understand or I'm more compassionate. I don't know. But you know what?
Thanks a lot.
Well, I don't want to sit in a room and scream at each other. I don't want to sit and find out. You know what I want? I don't want to focus on what separates us. I don't want to focus on what divides us. I don't want to focus on the 6 o'clock news of negativity. I don't want to focus on the bureaucrats in Washington. I don't want to focus on all the crap out there that they're throwing at us to disrupt us. I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on this awesome country. We are so blessed and fortunate to be here. And just, again, how many times, Sally, how often do you hear me say that on this show?
Every time.
And every time, and how often do you hear me say that in my life? It is truly a blessing that we all mm-hmm. should not lose sight of. So I consider it a great privilege to be able to bring these dialogues to you. We are blessed. We are a blessed people. We should embrace all of this. It's the richness of America. It's the possibilities for us to have this conversation today. It's everything we bring to the game and the dialogue we're able to have. I wouldn't have it any other way. So I am more than optimistic. I am thrilled. I am excited. I am really juiced about the possibilities of this country. That's what we're going to continue to define on this show on life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure. Catch us live every day, friends, at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Encore at 11 p.m. You can catch us anywhere in the world on many of the talk radio networks, including iHeartRadio and our apps, of course. You can put it right on your smartphone. Just look for America Out Loud Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Kristen H., Sally Fernandez. This is Malcolm Out Loud. To be continued, friends.